You're listening to the podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Audio Boom, and thepodcast.co.uk. And if you're listening, I'm so sorry. Or, you know, leave a review or something. Thanks.
The podcast with a K. With Christian Colley, James McLean, and Brian Turner.
Greetings, podcasterites. This is I, Christian Corley. I'm joined by James McLean and Brian Terranova. We are the podcast with a K. I'm in a bit of a quandary, chaps, actually. Because we told everyone that we're going to talk about Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Now, I've checked the stats for last week's podcast.
Yeah.
And we've only had like five people listen. So, no one cares about the X-Files.
Well, guess what? They're gonna have to suck it up.
So, look, on Christmas Day, in a few days' time, we've got Doctor Who. It's back.
Sorry.
On Friday.
It's me, Brian, Christian, and the cast of The Avengers, which I've been sort of half watching on Netflix.
Okay. When you say The Avengers, do you mean John Steed?
No, I'm talking The Avengers Assemble. I was just clicking onto that bit where the Hulk punches Thor. And I just find that very satisfying because I really do hate Thor.
Okay.
In fact, one second, I'm just going to rewatch that again. Carry on with your intro, it's all right. There's only five people listening.
Is this okay with you?
Well, you said there's five people listening. I mean, that's like, if we include the cast of The Avengers, that means we've got maybe 10 people involved in the podcast.
Yeah, but they're not listening, are they? You're watching them.
They're too
on
busy fighting
media.
For New York at the moment. Listening to this, but they would be otherwise.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but I mean, we assume that Stephen Moffat's too busy making a TV program to listen to this. But so anyway, Doctor Who's on Friday, which is weird, because it's Christmas Day on Friday, so obviously it's not that weird. And it is the husbands of River Song, with Greg Davies and Matt Lucas joining Vic Capaldi and that lovely Alex Kingston. Who doesn't seem to have done any nude work since she passed 50, so that's nice. I really want to talk about it, but we're going to leave it till next week and review it. And I am really, really miffed off with a particular article that was published on the BBC website the other day, doing its utmost to justify Clara and Mia Schilder travelling off in their TARDIS at the end of the last series. I mean, it was a very poorly written kind of piece of sort of like sub-Tumblr content, to be honest with you.
This was on the BBC?
It was on the BBC, yeah.
Because Radio Times seems to do a lot of that stuff at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. So, not impressed with that at all. I mean, if it happened, it happened, right? Don't even sort of like debase yourself by trying to justify it. And, you know, Christmas is coming, the goose is getting fat. That's nothing to do with Alex Kingston either. Because I know someone's thinking that. Not one of you two. I mean, someone out there in listener land. What listener is thinking that? That listener over there. I fancy Alex Kingston, actually.
In Where a kind are you of going with this? You sure Mrs. you want to carry
Robinson
on this path?
Kind of way. Yeah,
this
I know.
It's like a drunken amble path to some really nasty confession, which will end up with...
I love you guys. So we've got a Christmas Doctor Who coming up, and I don't know too much about this. This is really weird. Since my divorce, as it were, I haven't had those emails. I haven't had the screenshots, you know. So I don't go anywhere near that. I haven't seen any trailers for it either. This is really weird. It's actually like The Force Awakens, in that I've stayed away from virtually everything to do with it up until actually seeing it. We'll come back to that later, dear listener. So what about you? Have you watched trailers for the new Doctor Who?
No.
Well, nope.
I saw the trailer at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
And that was enough to make me not even bother watching. If it wasn't a family Christmas and I didn't have a podcast, I think this would be the first time I'd probably just not bother with Doctor Who.
You nailed it right there. If we didn't have the podcast, I wouldn't be watching it. So I would probably watch it just because it's Doctor Who. I would check it out, but I wouldn't be you know, watching it Christmas Day, I wouldn't be in any rush to watch it. I would just watch it whenever I was sitting there going, oh, wait, there's that thing I should be watching, you know? So, yeah, not excited. You know,
at all.
Yeah, not excited at all. Yeah, that's just the best way to say it.
It's a weird thing. Someone said to me, hey, I've got a copy of, I'm lying here actually, of The Avengers. Okay. Do you want to watch this at 5:15 on Christmas Day? I'd be tempted. My point being is that there'd be a lot of other things that I would be tempted to watch rather than a new episode of Doctor Who, which is, I don't think I've ever had that before. There's been a couple of times I've thought I'm not that keen on the next episode, but I've never had it where I really don't see anything in that trailer that I am interested in at all. I mean, Matt Lucas is a, from all I hear, is a lovely guy, but I he's always used in such comic tropes that I don't find him investing. I quite like Greg Davis as a comedian.
I like Greg Davis.
But again, same issue. As soon as you start putting Hale and Pace into episodes of Doctor Who, you can, you know, unless you're very lucky, it can just discharge that interface. Weird, weird imagery there, but yes, discharging the interface there. See, obviously, we've gone 3,000 years into the future with this podcast, zapping along with the terminology. So yeah. And I'm not even gone on to River Song, so.
I have no. Do you know the publicity picture of the three of them outside the TARDIS?
Yeah.
Of Greg Davis, Peter Capaldi, and Alex Kingston.
No.
Capaldi and Kingston look like they're flirting with each other, and then Greg Davis is sort of like looking into the distance in terror. Now there's often a publicity shot of people with in Doctor Who, the Doctor and Companion, whatever, and they're sort of like looking at something in terror. So like Greg Davis is doing that, and the other two are flirting. It's the weirdest publicity picture ever.
But then
it really is.
He does tend to like those sort of looking away from camera shots when I see him doing the sort of quiz shows and the likes. He's always I think he's quite wary of his expressions and what sells.
Have you seen Man Down?
No, I've not.
That's good. That is good. I really enjoyed that. That was one with one of the last things Rick Mail did. Rick Mail played his father.
Right. Yeah.
And he's proper, and like Greg Davies' character is like a grown up, and he's a teacher, and Rick Mail's character just tortures him. He has his life all the time. It's really amusing, really good. One of the best new comedies I've seen in the last few years. Although I have to say I haven't seen The Detectorists, and I'm told that's really good.
I think something that is interesting on Doctor Who that I know you saw me sort of talking about. Well, we were talking with one of our writers on a website that we can't remember its name, unless of course Christian's introducing this podcast, then suddenly he remembers it. Has to redo the podcast name every week. This is literally every week he gets it wrong and he associates
and then have to re-record
with that website.
Yeah.
About, and I think this is a fairly interesting point, is the changes in television, and is what his argument basically is that Doctor Who.
Oh, this is Richard Forbes, isn't it?
Yeah, this is Richard Forbes. Is it the Doctor Who? See, I didn't want to name him because I didn't want it to make it sound like I was sort of arguing here with the comfort without him being able to respond.
Well, he got mentioned last week, so.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm always curious because me and Richard sort of often sit on different ends of the spectrum. He's very, very. He really enjoys and is very supportive of Moffat's production, which I'm less so. So we often sort of have these sort of debates. But his suggestion was that Doctor Who is now indicative of the change in television towards sort of more niche programming, where you're not looking for wide audience appeal, you're looking for niche markets, and so you're selling it to those, and that expecting Doctor Who to be that family audience slot is archaic and is a part of the BBC's archaic strategy. And it's the BBC really that needs to understand that that's not where it should be at, and what Doctor Who and Stephen Moffat's doing is the right thing. It is approaching sort of fan audiences. So the audience losses are the natural audience losses who are just not with the programme as it's now being modelled. Would you say that's a fair assessment, Christian? Because as I say, it's not here. So I'm a little cautious about.
I think that's more or less it, yeah, and I understand what you're saying there.
I think it is an interesting argument, and I was sort of having to think about it myself as I was responding to him, because I don't totally agree with it. I don't agree with it on the first point. Doctor Who's remit as a production model was for family audiences. It's not up to the production. If that was Stephen Moffat's intent to decide to change that remit, when clearly from all we hear, the BBC is not happy with that change, especially when it means a half its viewing figures dropping off on the overnights. So that, I think, is a concern. And secondly, is, and this is something which is discussed and argued quite a lot, is how much will TV change? You know, because we've got things like Netflix, where which do focus on niche marketing. You are marketing, you're selling shows to specific types of people. But television isn't technically Netflix. Are we going to lose television? Is the family... Because, you know, that's what television is. It's a shared experience, isn't it? It's a shared living experience. But it is being fragmented into tablets and laptops and the likes, where you do have a one-on-one thing. What do you guys think? I mean, not specifically on Richard's point, maybe, but more on this whole idea: is Doctor Who ahead of the curve here, or are we over justifying Doctor Who's drop in viewing figures? Or
I think to quantify it as a shift away from a mythological gathering is just to rewind the clock 20 years and say family viewing doesn't exist anymore, and then Russell T Davies came along and proved that it does. So
yeah, that is an interesting point, because people were the sort of Richard's argument ahead of that time, before Netflix and everything became big, there was this talk that there wasn't a family audience anymore, that Doctor Who, that
exactly, in those days it wasn't Netflix, was it? In those days it was DVDs and games consoles.
Yes, absolutely. And people were saying that this was that there was no strategy that you could employ to get families to watch TV together. That's very true. It's interesting. What about you, Brian Face? Because you've got... I say that because you've got a face of a Brian.
I do. That's amazing you've put that together.
Coming from America, where you do have a far less wide audience strategy these days, since The X-Files, strangely enough, if we want to talk about an unpopular podcasting topic. That really started this Fox's way to sort of break into the networks, was to sort of look at niche markets and push this forward. Well, how do you feel on this? Because obviously, Doctor Who as it is, whether you like it as not in quality, in terms of its strategy, probably does fit more the models of America, do you think, now? Or is that wrong?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, since Russell brought it back, and actually probably more so since the TV movie, but since Russell brought it back, it certainly fit a lot of the American formatting for TV shows and storytelling kind of methods, and not to say that it was even exclusive to us, because you guys had a fair amount of shows over there, I felt, that did the same, but
only normally because we were selling them to you.
Well, right, well, there you go. But no, but for me, the whole family concept, it's a huge thing to me, because it's like the classic debate with the old series. It's like they talk about it when they made the show, they wanted a family show to go in between the Sports Review, and I forget the other thing that came after. I can never remember those things. But they wanted a family show, and that was the point. It was never a children's show. It was a family show. And it's sort of, you can argue, digressed at some point into like some kind of family viewing, or rather children's type show. But Doctor Who, I think, works best in the family setting. I think what Russell tried to do with Torchwood really kind of alienated viewers from that aspect of the Doctor Who world, because kids couldn't watch that. Then Sarah Jane Adventures alienated some viewers, because a lot of the adults were sitting there going, wow, this is like watching Sesame Street. You know, it's a little tough to get into, because this isn't really Doctor Who either. And now what Moffat has done has taken Doctor Who and he's made it grow up. It's gone too far. You know, like there's too many sexual references, too many sexual allusions, too many kind of adult themes and darker tones. And I am one of those fans that always wanted to see a bit of a darker tone in Doctor Who, but I think you can get a darker tone that still fits a family viewing method and not going as far as he did. So I do think it's a huge thing, but I think I can't say it's solely the only thing that has brought Doctor Who where it is right now, with a drop of about half its viewers. And I think a lot of that is his storytelling in its incomplete nature. You know, he just doesn't seem to follow through with stories. So we're always left hanging. Like, it's one thing if you're left with a draw your own conclusion ending. It's another if you're left with, please write the rest of this episode because I couldn't be bothered to do so. I just wanted to talk about sex. You know, that's completely awful, and it just shouldn't be the way it is in the show.
So just to clarify, Brian, because I just, so it, this doesn't misrepresent you, what you're saying is that when you say that it's become too adult, you're not saying okay, you may personally sort of agree with it, but you're not saying, you're saying it's become, in its format, become too adult for what it was intended to do as a show, rather than you saying, I personally just think it's become too adult. Is that what you're saying? You're saying within its relationship to American audiences, there's been a shift which might affect it? Or is,
well, I'll put it to you, okay, the best way to say it is, it had a market. It had an audience that you were marketing to, and by making it be, when I say adult, it's not pornographic. It's just like, you know, it's not something that you would have your children. As a matter of fact, half the people I know with children, and I think Christian has even said this too, since Moffat took over, they watch the episodes now and they judge whether or not it's one they can show their child.
Yeah, yeah, I do that. Unfortunately, my sister-in-law decides that I'm wrong and just lets them watch it, whatever.
Right, well.
And then there, Karen, are, there are still, I mean, I remember being told that there are network, when it was, networks have, or broadcasters anyway, have stepped aside from Doctor Who, feeling that its remit is too childish for the sort of format that it's, that it would, that they would expect it to fulfill, that the genre format, if
you know, exists. It's tough. I mean, you look at what Russell did with the show, and he really brought it to a mass audience, and he's the one that got the show the massive amount of viewers that are now dropping off in droves during Moffat's era. So somebody can say that if they want, but that clearly wasn't the case. You know, like it became a show that people loved, and I don't think, except maybe with the possibility of Blink, I don't think there was one Blink and maybe Midnight. I don't think there were episodes in Russell's era that you needed to watch beforehand and judge if your children should see it.
But the ratings were good in America this year for the series. Did they stay consistently good? Has anyone checked on that, Christian? Did you?
I believe they're just, yeah, along across the board, just pretty consistent. Yeah.
Here's the thing you got to remember about Doctor Who here in America. Okay, the original series, the classic series, was aired on PBS. You only knew about it if you were the type of person that was inclined to watch science fiction or British dramas, kind of thing, and you really liked what was considered to be a niche kind of show. When the show came back to America, we got it a year after you guys did, because they couldn't find the network over here because no one believed that it was going to be a success. So after it was a success in England and after it had aired in Canada, we got it a year later because the Sci-Fi Channel decided to pick it up, and so did one or two PBS stations. So they picked it up, but all they did was air it. And then subsequently you got the rest of the few seasons, but it was still a battle. It was still Doctor Who fans in America telling other people, look, you need to check this show out. It's great. Please check it out. It's on the Sci-Fi Channel, or maybe you can see it on PBS, depending, you know, borrow my DVDs, whatever. It's a great show. Check it out. It's really good. You should watch it. Then Russell leaves, Moffat comes in, and the show makes the move to BBC America. BBC America all of a sudden has billboards all across America. It's on magazine covers everywhere that Series 5 is coming. There's TV advertisements galore to check this show out on BBC America everywhere, you know, not even just on the BBC America. They advertised it. So the Moffat era is doing so well over here, and I don't want to discount what he has done that's well that people do enjoy, because people do enjoy his era. So I'm not saying this is 100% it, but the advertising over here alone brought it to the more mainstream market. It made people more aware of the show. It was no longer the niche show that the classic series and the Russell T. Davis era were here in America.
What about this previous season? Did you see a markup or the same or a markdown in promotion?
Do you know, honestly, I don't pay attention to that stuff anymore. I mean, there's okay, not quite any more billboards, but I'll tell you, I went to, as we're going to eventually get to in here, I went to see the Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the, I've seen it twice now, and good the... Yeah, well,
show off.
Hey, there's a reason for that, which I'll talk about. But the second one was a matinee, and it had a trailer for the Christmas episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, right.
All right.
Yeah, so yes, they are marketing it more. I don't know how heavily, but part of it is it got marketed so heavily, and then you had the people hearing, people like myself, saying what a great show it was, and the cosplayer scene at conventions, of course, really made people aware of the show as well. And then it was basically a lot of people jumped on board with Matt Smith, and a lot of people here in America, in my opinion, believe that Doctor Who is what Moffat presents it as, not what it was prior to. And a lot of the ones that I know, some of them just don't want to be bothered watching some of the older stuff, and not all of them. Some of them really picked it up and are really into the older things, particularly the Russell's era, of course, and some of them are making their way through the classic. But a lot of people, it's just like now that Matt left, they left. Some of them stayed on for Peter. But really, it's just, you know, I checked out the show before. It just wasn't the same. So it's their first exposure to the show because it was the first mass exposure to the show that America had had.
I see. Well, right. So yeah, so the new Doctor is almost like having a new lead in a television show. And that, in especially stateside, can be quite a dangerous where the people adapt. And especially if they're not used to this process.
Yeah, it definitely can. I'll tell you what, I was watching Death in Paradise.
Uh-huh.
And who was the lead in that, Ben?
Ben Miller.
Ben Miller. Okay, I was going to say Miller, but I
thought
that was wrong.
Rhymes with Ben Stiller.
It does a little.
Yeah, it sure does. I loved him. I thought it was great, and I thought they were going somewhere really cool with the story with him and Camille in there. I mean, not really cool, like the typical love story, but I really liked how it was unfolding, and it was going good. And then, spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen it, I guess, but, you know, whatever.
It's 3 years now. So
there you go. So then in the first episode of series 3, he becomes the murder victim, and it's like, what the hell? I didn't know the change had happened, and I nearly didn't continue watching the show, but I pressed on, and I actually really like the new guy. But there is even with me, you know, there's a lot of this person has changed. I really liked that old one. I can't get into this. I hate cast changes. I really do. And somehow with Doctor Who, it works just because it's built into the format. But like other shows, and like we talked about last week with the X-Files, when they tried it with season 8 and more so in season 9, just didn't sell for me. It didn't work because it's got to flow. It's got to work. It's got to make sense. And it just didn't. But with Doctor Who, people who are not used to character changes or regeneration, and starting with somebody like Matt Smith, you know, they're not going to understand, and they're just going to have the typical American response, which I'm sure, again, is not an everybody thing, but they're going to have that response, and they're going to, you know, flee, especially as we had seen so much over the internet, when it's an older guy instead of that handsome young one that they liked, you know, which I'm seeing a shift in that. I'm seeing a change in that people aren't minding that. They're appreciating that people of various ages can be the leads in TV shows. And certainly people did stay with the show. And a lot of the consensus was that this season was a vast improvement over series 8. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, I don't know if that saved it really, because it was really an up and down kind of quality type season, even depending on who I spoke with. Everybody had their, this one was good, this one wasn't good, and it wasn't always the same ones that we think are bad, you know. Other people dislike the ones we liked, you know. So it hasn't been a consistent season, we'll say it that way.
Sorry about that. Not done that.
As you should be.
It was only me just telling you to turn your sodding phone off. I just thought it was an interesting point, given that TV is changing, or, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there is even a debate now whether we should be calling it television, because it's now over so many platforms and you can interact with it in so many different ways, and in ways where it's not really television anymore. Is Netflix television? It does sort of bring fresh questions up, but I mean, I still wonder whether the family, once again, as Christian says, whether the family audience is being dismissed too early, in the sense, like I said in the debate, you know, while Netflix has sort of made anime a very open public resource, which will inevitably make it more popular, it's not going to stop Disney from being a family entertainment. You know, you're not going to lose certain things which are considered family pleasures.
Well, you know, there's entire channels that are dedicated to family entertainment.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. Suppose I always think the problem is with family entertainment, and I think Doctor Who is at the pinnacle of this problem, is that you've got different, should we call them tribes, who claim ownership, and so who don't want it to be family entertainment, who want it to be their thing, or perceive it as it should be their thing, or their thing should be priority. And I think that's where the problem comes, and that's where family often gets dismissed, because family is such a vague category, no one has real ownership over it.
Yeah.
And people just by nature, sports, fans, whatever, are territorial.
Well, and even to add to that too, you know, we always talk about this, and this was the case for Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss, but also like a lot of our comic book writers and creators nowadays, and even TV show people like J.J. Abrams and so on. They grew up with the show as children, so when they grow up, they want to do that show, they want to create that show, but they want to do it in a sense that it grew up with them. You know, and there, to a degree, I agree with that, because there's smarter ways to tell stories now. There's more clever ways to go about it, more clever tricks and techniques that they can use. And I think, again, while we have talked about, and, you know, I don't want to make it sound like we're total, or even me, is a total Russell T. Davis fanboy, but I think he found the right mix. And I do remember toward the end of his era, you know, his era needed shaking up. Something needed to change because he got kind of stale with it. But he found the right mix to grow the show up to still be a family audience show, and that worked. And somebody like Moffat is trying to grow it up past what it actually is for what it is. Now, if they were going to bring back Doctor Who in 2005 and say, this is going to be a reboot, we're going to start from scratch from day one, then you can choose any format you want. It doesn't have to be a family show. But if you're making it have that history with that past show, or even if you're making Moff's era have that history with Russell's show, then you should stick to that audience, that particular audience, and remember who they are, especially when you're looking at a season like this. Forget the ratings in America, okay? Look at the ratings in the UK. They dropped by half.
Yeah, well, that's the other problem. This show is done for, its remit is for family entertainment, and family entertainment on Saturday is peak numbers for the BBC. So regardless of where one thinks it should be, or what Moffat is, whether Moffat is doing stuff which is good or better, or suitable, the bottom line is the show is still mandated as a family show to pick up audiences on a Saturday night, and it's not doing that. So I think it's a very interesting debate. As I said, I just thought we'd bring it up because I think it's interesting, and I kind of had a feeling that not anyone here had particularly much they wanted to talk about the Christmas special. So, you know,
we're going to be forced to talk about it in a week. So, you know, why talk about it sooner?
Really? Listen, I just want to bring this in. CNET, that bastion of Doctor Who content, their technology website, say that Stephen Moffat's told them, we're already moving on series 10. We've had meetings today with two writers who've never written Doctor Who before. If I told you their names, your brain would explode.
I wish people wouldn't do that. Because I don't think beyond people, Star Wars fans, that really happens.
No, well, I commented, I don't know where it was it on Facebook or Twitter? I'm looking forward to the announcement of Orson Welles and Lawrence Kasdan.
Well, that's it, exactly. You know, where you're going to be disappointed.
And booking myself into hospital in advance, just in case. That's a silly thing to say.
I mean, if it was a Russell T. Davis and Terrence Dix, I would be sort of surprised. My head wouldn't explode, but I'd be like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, you got to remember that Clara was going to have the most awful death, and she was never coming back. She was leaving the show and never coming back, and it was going to break your heart. And instead, she just flies off into space to have more adventures and never die until she feels like dying. So, yeah, you know, whatever he says anymore is just complete BS. Like, this is the thing. This is why I don't watch, read, or look at anything pertaining to the show anymore, because that man talks out his ass and I really don't care who listens to that, and I can't stand it anymore. It's just I want to be excited about the show, and the least likely person to get me excited about the show is Stephen Moffat.
I used to get annoyed with Russell T. Davies for this, but he never went to the same extremes that Moffat does.
Well, as I said to Christian, one of the journalists we speak to, he won't interview Stephen Moffat on the basis that he feels, as a journalist, and despite most journalists having a reputation of being hacks and liars, there are journalists who aren't, who don't want to interview someone who they feel is, you know, on the basis of a journalism looking for the truth, that they're just going to be told lies for whatever intent, whether it's to try and protect the show or make the show more interesting for the fans, or just to make their lives easier with production, or just for the sheer fun of it. They don't want to be embroiled in someone who is just going to lie to them and will openly admit it as well. So I think it can be a dangerous strategy to have, because it does just desensitize people from listening to you. But
well, and it's also that false hope. Like, he is excited. He's got these two writers, but he wants us to be excited too. So you can't just announce those writers and hope that people are going to be excited. You tell them that they're excited. It's the same thing with the Sonic sunglasses. Because we thought it was a bad idea that he didn't create something new, he instead just decided to try and like cash in on something that already existed, a sonic device. He then had to talk down to us and tell us that we were idiots, essentially, because we didn't have the creativity that it took to create the original sonic screwdriver. But he did, by taking another mundane device and throwing sonic in the front of it. And it's like, no, so what you've done is just become a carbon copier, just change something so that now you can't be a plagiarist, you know, and but we're the idiots because the creativity is lost. You know, you could have created an entire new device with those sunglasses, but we're the idiots. And it's brilliant that you want to talk down to your audience in this way. So what he's trying to do is just create the hype machine, you know, and it's not going to work because once they're announced, people are going to sit there and go, oh, okay, those are the ones. Yeah, sure.
One's because going to wonder whether he actually has whether he gets a patent on that.
Yeah, well, it's exactly like when a story has a very mysterious past for a character, and then someone comes along after 50 years and tries to explain that very mysterious past, and it's never going to live up to what's in the fans' minds. It's exactly that. So now you say you've got these fantastic writers, you're going to blow your mind on this kind of thing. And like Christian said, he just threw out like two amazing choices, and it's like, but it's never going to be that, you know. It's just never going to work that way, you know. It's not going to be. It's going to be in what's in like two fans' minds, and they're going to be happy, and then the rest of the people are going to go, oh, well, maybe I should be happy too. I don't, you know, like it's ridiculous.
Okay, so that's the end of this week's Castobra. Oh shit, it's not.
There we go. There we go.
So that's the end of this week's podcast with a K. We shall be back next week when we will be talking about the husbands of River Song. So we did mention the Force Awakens earlier, and the three of us have got together and talked about that. You can listen to that in a different podcast, which you'll be able to find on Audio Boom or here on thepodcast.co.uk. Until then, it's goodbye.